Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
In celebration of opening day, we've got a special episode of the Moth Podcast for you. The theme is baseball and the surprising ways it connects people.
I gaze out at the players on the field, and then I look over at my dad, and I realize that in the silence between us that something has changed. It's like I'm seeing him for the first time.
Two stories about baseball, family, and so much more. The episode's available right now. Subscribe to the Moth Podcast to make sure you hear it.
Yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring.
Boring.
You didn't get bored by baseball.
Hey, one thing the game needs is more people like you. You.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
Mookie Betts.
Daniel Bard.
Steve Aoki.
Jared Saltalamacchia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball.
Baseball isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring. Here's your host, Rob Radford.
Golf tournament silence.
Anticipation to see what...
Oh, goodness! That ball had a family! In game two, his first home run! A two-run bomb!
John, that wasn't just a home run. That ball almost exited the ballpark.
Hardest hit ball by a Red this year. That was nearly 115. It brought everyone to their feet.
Let's go. Ellie De La Cruz. Let's start the hype. John Sadak, Barry Larkin on the call of the day. Home run call of the day. Excellent job. And of course, that game, that Reds game, finished with another huge, huge home run. Will Benson with a walk-off. So, the Reds, the talk of the town, but Ellie De La Cruz, you heard it with Sam Dykstra on this podcast, him breaking it down about why this guy was going to be so exciting when he got called up. Well, sure enough, he gets called up, and sure enough, he's exciting. So, this is going to be a electric factory of fun when it comes to Ellie De La Cruz. Everybody knows that. And, by the way, an electric factory of fun is what everybody perceived the Reds the last couple days. MLB.com called them the buzz of baseball, which is awesome, right? You see the images. You see the Benson celebration after he has his walk-off. You see all the hype surrounding De La Cruz. And that shows you the power of young players, of what might be, of the excitement of prospects, of the excitement of okay, you know, this actually is the future of baseball, because the buzz of baseball is sitting at 29-33 and it's still 5 games back. But you have De La Cruz, you have friend of the program, Baseball Isn't Boring advocate Matt McClain. You have a lot of young players and you have the promise of what might be. Also, don't discount that it came against the Dodgers. Second straight win over the Dodgers for the Reds. 19,000 people there to watch the Reds. Now, we will track that to see if that number goes up. We'll see, because that's what the whole purpose is, to get people, fannies in the seat, people in the stands, get people excited. Also, by the way, the Dodgers losing again. Well, Diamondbacks are one of our picks to click. One of the teams where we've had multiple people on the podcast, GMs, managers, stars. They're 2 games up on the Dodgers right now. 2 games up. And since we've dropped the pair of podcasts with Torrey Lovello and Zach Gallen, 7-2. Coincidence? I don't think so. Well, speaking of good teams, heading into the weekend, the big showdown in baseball. There's nothing like a good June showdown. The only teams with 40 or more wins, yes, the Rays and the Rangers, They are playing each other in St. Petersburg at Tropicana Field. Also, by the way, the only two teams with collective OPSs of over 800. So they can both hit. So what do we do for you? On tomorrow's podcast, Baseball's a Boring Podcast, we will have Texas Rangers hitting coach Tim Hires. So if you want to get ready for this series, the biggest series of the year, the biggest showdown of the year, this is a podcast you're going to want to listen to. But that's tomorrow. Today, we got a really good one. We do. This is a good interview. We wanted to get the perspective of an umpire of going through all the ebbs and flows and the differences they have come with this season, with all the rules changes and the really the dramatic about face when it comes to the way things are done, not only for baseball, but for umpires. So we turn to one of the best umpires that ever did it. Ever. That's Jim Joyce, retired since 2016, but he's been in the loop, stays in the loop with umpires, talks to umpires, helps with MLB, so forth and so on. But Jim Joyce is a great guy to talk to. Yeah, you know, we get it. When people interview Jim Joyce, it's a lot about the Armando Galarraga situation back in 2010, where he made the wrong call and took away the perfect game from Galarraga. But we can talk about that another time, as we said at the end of the podcast. That's fine. Jim will talk about it. Jim will talk about anything, talk about 2013 World Series, anything you want. But what I wanted to talk to about with Jim was exactly how the umpires feel when it comes to what baseball looks like right now. Because we haven't heard a whole bunch from umpires directly saying, hey, you know, this is good, this is bad, this is a perception. And now while Jim isn't currently an active ump, he talks to umps. He certainly has a perspective that we almost none of us have when it comes to how this actually would manifest itself as an ump and things that he went through when he was umping that might line up with what's going on now. It's just a really, really good interview. Subscribe, rate, review, listen. Also, at BB Isn't Boring. Also, the book, A Damn Near Perfect Game, the best Father's Day gift you can buy anyone. And went out in Times Square with Godfather Joe Kelly just the other day to talk to some folks in Times Square about A Damn Near Perfect Game. That'll be out soon, that video, those interviews. It was predictably a good time. But speaking of a good time, here's a great interview. Jim Joyce. All right, there's nobody I'd rather have on today than one of the best umpires who ever did it, Jim Joyce. Jim, how are you?
Very well, Rob. How are you guys doing out there in beautiful Massachusetts?
Oh, well, it's good. It's good. You know, I don't know if it's as good as the West Coast, but still, it's good. And the great game of baseball. Let's start here, Jim, because I ask this of everybody. And the great thing is that there's no wrong answer, and everybody has a unique answer, pretty much. The commissioner, general managers, everybody. I think you're the first umpire that I've asked. And the simple question is, why isn't baseball boring?
Why isn't baseball boring? Well, part of the reason that baseball isn't boring is because you don't know what's going to happen next. And that's the beauty of the game. And the game has transcended all these years, and the popularity maybe has waned a little bit. But, you know, overall, baseball still pastime, and people still look at it that way. And I have read some things and seen some things that kids are actually coming back to baseball. And around here, I live in Beaverton, Oregon, and on any given night when my wife and I are out about and stuff like that, you know what, the baseball fields are still, you know, they got T-ball going, they got Little League going, they got, you know, everything's, you know, they're still doing baseball. That's not to take away that they're not doing other things like, you know, soccer and such, but baseball is still very, in my humble opinion, is still a popular game.
It's a great answer, and I think it's true, too. I think it's, we're seeing a lot of the bounce back, and you know, obviously they were worried about the demographic. I think they're grabbing some of the demographic. The fact that you see kids playing is a step forward, right? I mean, that's what we want.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I still see, you know, there's still obviously kids love soccer and stuff like that, and it's a good sport to play and everything like that. But the ability it takes to play baseball, kids are still challenged by that, and they love it. And they still, you know, they still go out there and they still like to play. I have a little boy that is, I'm looking out at his house right now. And his mom just put up a pitch back. And he goes out there, he's a lefty. He has a mound drawn on his driveway. And he goes out after he comes home from school. I mean, they're going to be out of school here in a couple of weeks. And he stands there and he pitches to this pitch back. I think that's the coolest thing I've seen in a long time. You don't see that every day because, you know, kids are, you know, nowadays they don't play in the street anymore because, you know, just because they increase the traffic and everything. But to see a little boy doing that in his driveway, that's pretty cool. I'll be very honest with you. That tells you how baseball is still playing out there.
I love it. I'm getting fired up. I love that. So let's jump to the here and the now. And, you know, this is a lot of reasons people point to, I don't want to say the renaissance of baseball, but baseball taking a positive step forward is some of the changes. You know, I'll just ask you out of the gate, you know, as someone who went through changes over the course of your career, but probably nothing as dramatic as what everybody's been thrown this last year. What's your perception on what's going on right now in baseball?
Okay, the thing that I really am excited about and I really enjoy is, I've talked to a few of the guys that are working that still know my name, and the one thing that they are overjoyed about is the pitch clock. Now, I don't know how that plays to my next door neighbor because we really don't talk about stuff like that, but I know that when I talk to my brother and stuff back in Ohio, his friends and my friends here actually enjoy that part of how the games have been speeded up. And I really have trouble in my head finding an argument for that. I've read some things that there's some particular players out there saying that it's a safety issue. I don't get it. I really, because when I started in baseball in 1978, I know that's 100 years ago. You know what? Games were played at 2 hours and 15 minutes, and nobody complained at all. And when I got to the big leagues, the average time of a game when I got to the big leagues in 1986 was my first call up here. Games were being played between 2:15 and 2:45. If you went 3 hours, it was a long day. You know what? And when, by the time in my 20th year in the game of baseball, a 3.5 hour game was normal. And I don't know how we call that normal when we see what's happening now. And you know what? If we could train pitchers to pitch the way we're pitching right now under the premise of the pitch clock, eventually your minor leaguers are going to be doing the same thing, and when they come to the major leagues, eventually, I know this is a prediction that probably will never happen, but eventually you can get rid of the pitch clock. As long as you stay to the norm of getting on the mound quicker and pitching quicker, keeping the batters in the box. You know, that was all tried before when I was in the major leagues. We actually had recommendations from the league that we had to keep guys in the box.
Right.
Well, we did that for 2 weeks. And everybody loved it, and everybody thought it was okay. But after 2 weeks, all of a sudden, it would start to wane a little bit, and then eventually by the third or fourth week of the season, it was done. It was over. We had the same thing about pitchers pitching within 20 seconds. We did that in spring training. As soon as the season started, the player. Remember this,
yep.
Rob.
Yep.
The players dictate what goes on.
Yep.
The players dictate it. If they all agreed to this pitch clock, and now they're complaining about it, or some are, but the players are going to dictate how they want this game to be played. I don't see any drawback right now with the pitch clock. I'm excited about it. I think it's a good thing. I can't see... I don't know how there's a complaint about it. Now, I do know that I see some complaints from fans because of the ticket prices are so much and they're only getting 2.5 hours
yeah.
of entertainment.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Well, let me ask you, so from the umpire's perspective, as you're talking, I'm thinking through this. Number one, maybe this is pie in the sky stuff, but do you think that the quicker games will make for sharper umpiring, or will make it more challenging because there is so much going on?
You're right in both regards. I think it's a great question also because I think you're right on both sides of it. I think it makes umpiring a little bit more challenging because you are engaged now so many different avenues now. You have to make sure that the batter's in the box at a certain time when the clock rolls. You have to make sure the pitcher's on the mound facing the batter. There are just so many other variables that go on with that. But I also think that it makes the umpire be more engaged in the game, and the flow is much better, and there's not much standing around time anymore.
Mm. Mm.
I actually talked to one of the guys it was right after spring training, and he had been talking about how he was looking forward to retirement and stuff like that. And he told me that with this pitch clock, he might not retire.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
He said, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to baseball. He says, it's saving our bodies, it's saving our knees, and it has to be doing the same thing with the players. It has to be.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's... And, you know, another part of it is, and I'd be anxious to sort of get maybe the people that you talk to of the adjustment to it. You had talked to, and like I said, you've gone through plenty of adjustments, and you have to adjust, and some stick and some don't. But watching this throughout spring training, I watch the umpires, and they have to, they're doing their best. I mean, they were doing it was spring training for them too, Jim. I mean,
Exactly. You're exactly right. When something new happens, you're exactly right. That's a new asset to the game, and the umpires have to abide by it. And we had many years like that when I was working and I was a younger umpire. We had directives from the league on multiple things, from ball rules, and new regulations on bats that were coming out that we had to pay attention to and everything like that. This is an evolution of the game, in my humble opinion.
Mm. So the next, we have this level of change, and then we have what a lot of people perceive as the next level of change, which I imagine you and your friends are heightened to, which is the robot ump thing. What's your perception of that?
It's not needed.
Hmm.
It's just. I think it is more of a knee-jerk reaction on. And imagine me saying this, trying to get the game to be perfect. But, you know, I don't see a need for it. Here's my problem with it. My problem is that the average umpire only misses about 4 or 5 pitches per game. Now, it's not been... cited where these pitches are missed or whatever.
Right.
But if that is in fact true, and I know that when I was working, my last year was 2016, the average at that time was 6.
Mm-hmm.
It's gone to 4, I believe, this year or last year. If you're only missing 4 pitches a game, then challenge the pitches. If make it part of strategy during the game. If Terry Francona is sitting in the dugout in the 6th inning or the 7th inning with bases loaded, on a 3-2 pitch, if Terry Francona thinks that he can get either way, whether he wants a ball or a strike, whether he's on offense or defense, if he doesn't like the call, challenge it. They have tech, technology right now, and I'm sure you've seen it, they don't even leave the field now. They just walk to, like, a certain spot in the field. They turn on the microphone. They're in communication with the replay center, and boom, it's done.
Yep.
So it's not going to increase the time of a game if that happens. And I think that they use that as a strategy point during the game. I think the managers will like that, will enjoy it. And as far as the robo-up arguments, you know, I saw something the other day where a manager and a batter got ejected over the call that the robo-umpire made.
Wow.
It made me laugh. It's actually not, I forget what site I was looking at. But the batter gets ejected, and then the manager gets ejected because the umpire was right, and he proved it to him. He says, they told me to call the strike, not... I just do it. The robo umpire told me to do it. If you're going to have that, then there's no place in the game for something like that. That's just ludicrous to me.
Well, first of all, I love that idea. I sincerely love that idea. And second of all, I think that you're right about their knee-jerk reaction because, and maybe you have a perspective of this, is that more so than ever before, certainly more so than 2016, these things are, everyone's being put under the microscope because of Twitter, because, I mean, you have a Twitter account, Umpire Scorecard, which comes out every day. And so, you know, everyone screams and yells about this and that, but that's the thing I would imagine that you see that the microscope that these guys are being put under for the little things is much more, right?
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt it is. I mean, social media is it can be your friend, but it can be your worst enemy also. And I know what you're talking about. I have seen that. But here's the problem. I don't have a problem with people being a Monday morning quarterback. I really don't. As a matter of fact, that's part of the beauty of sports. But I do have a problem of putting something on the internet and calling it gospel. Mm-hmm. And I mean that these sites that they're putting up, that they're calling balls and strikes from their basement. Mm. It just amazes me because they never cite where they're getting their information from, whether it's just from the TV, K-Zones, or whatever. But I can tell you this, and this is, I'm kind of letting something out of the bag, but I've been retired for 6 years now, so I can kind of get away with this now. Mm-hmm. When I was in the replay center, we were delegated to the replay center 3 times a year. We would sit in Chelsea, which is not there anymore. It's now down by the office on Fifth Avenue or whatever it is, Park Avenue. And we would sit there and now visualize sitting in a room. It's kind of darkened, and you have these monitors, these huge TVs, 65-inch TVs all the way around the room. And they were split screen with the home feed and the away feed. Mm-hmm. They put the K-zone for each home and the K-zone for the away team. Mm-hmm. A pitch would come in, and if the home team was at bat and the umpire called it a strike, the ball might register outside the strike zone. On the away feed, it was inside the strike zone. Mm. Very, very rarely did they match up unless the pitch was so errant, you know, that they both agreed on.
Right.
But there's still a manipulation of that, and I don't like that. So if they're saying that this is gospel, I'm sorry. I'm letting the cat out of the bag a little bit, but I don't believe it. I don't believe it. I think it's close, but I don't think it's as close as it should be. And that's why I say the challenge system is probably the best way to go on this.
Yeah, that's a great perspective. And I come back to it. I love that challenge idea. But another thing, obviously, this came before all these changes, which was the umpires having to, at one point when they first started, give, you know, full body pat downs to guys, and then it sort of became a glancing thing, and now it's sort of somewhere in between, checking for sicky stuff. Now, when I don't know about you, Jim, but when I think about pitchers doing that sort of stuff, I'm old school. I think of Joe Niekro, you know, flipping out the file board out of his pocket or something like that. I just wanted to get your perspective of of is this something that is manageable, I guess?
Yes, I agree. I think that's also another great question about, you know, about where we are in the game too. You know, the Joe Negro thing, that was a totally different thing. That was a manipulation of the baseball.
Right.
And I've actually had pitchers that manipulated baseballs by either scratching them, cutting them, or whatever. I actually, an old war story, when I was in the minor leagues in AAA, a pitcher had filed one of the rivets on his glove to where he could cut the baseball, and it makes the baseball, it makes it move in an errant manner. Mm. And but the funny thing about it is he went to cut the baseball and he cut his thumb. and he bled all over his thumb. He was bleeding out the mouth. He had to call time and have the manager come on. I get out there and I said, what's the problem? He said he cut his thumb. I said, how do you cut his thumb? He goes, you know, the manufacturer made one of these rivets on his glove. And they shirt. I looked at him and I said, I'm calling bull crap. And, you know, that's different than a pitcher using, I'm going to say it, what is quoted in the rule book, a foreign substance.
Right.
To get a better grip on a baseball. You're going to be shocked when I say this. I think a pitcher, I think the Players Association and Major League Baseball should sit down and, other than rosin, come up with a substance, whether it be the byproduct of the tanning stuff and rosin together,
yep,
or whatever. I do believe that that's a safety issue. I really do, especially in the early months of, you know, March, April, May, you know, doing like that. And that, I was a pitcher in college.
Mm.
And I will never say that I used it, but I did use it.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, I've only been on the field a couple times where a pitcher has used a foreign substance. We caught Will Smith one night, but he didn't even disguise it. It was pine tar in his arm.
Yep.
You know, but I get it. I really do get it. And what cracks me up is that when they catch somebody at it, or they have made them go wash their hands or whatever, the rotation on the spin of the baseball does go lower.
Mm.
I think they should have something. The batter's got pine tar, rosin, spray, sticky stuff, a batter tape, everything. They have the complete advantage on this. A pitcher has nothing.
Yeah.
Other than sweat. And they made an exception. They can go to their mouth now on the mound, as long as they wipe it off. So that's, you know, that was a couple years, you know, 10 years ago. So I think they should be able, there should be something they all can agree on that a pitcher can use.
Hmm.
Now, will a pitcher take it farther? Of course. That's why you have umpires.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. How about from the umpires, you see these guys, and you know, we have the case of Scherzer a little while ago, and, you know, saying, oh, listen, this is ammonia in pine tar. I'm sorry, in rosin. This is what they told us, okay. I mean, for an umpire, there's some room for interpretation, I would imagine, considering you are allowed to have your hands a little sticky because of the rot. I mean, yep. There's a little room for interpretation, right?
I couldn't agree with you more, but let's not insult our intelligence by sitting there and saying that when you can't shake the ball off your hand because it's so sticky, that it's just bullfrog and rosin. Mm. I'm sorry. I know the difference. I knew the difference 100 years ago. And I know that thing about Scherzer. Here's what cracks me up about that whole situation. Why didn't Scherzer fight it?
Hmm. Yeah.
Why, if he was so adamant that he did nothing wrong, why didn't he fight it? I would have. I would have been screaming about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sorry, but once again, I'm going to go back to, I think they should come to a happy agreement on letting the pitchers use something. I know they say that rosin doesn't do it. I'm sorry. I was a pitcher. I used rosin, and all it did was irritate my hands because I have such delicate hands, I guess. I'm not
sure. But you're not alone. You're not alone. I mean,
You know what I mean? And you can't tell me in this day and age that we can't find something that is a happy medium between, and this is what cracks me up, it's a fight between the players union. You got to defend the pitcher, but you got to defend the hitters too.
Hmm.
And I don't know why that there's, we can't find something that a pitcher can use that's going to make both sides happy.
Yeah, no, I've heard that and I agree. But, you know, last thing is, Jim, just about the state of umpiring. There's been a lot of turnover in umpires in the last few years, right? I mean, and I the one thing that I think goes vastly underappreciated is how hard a major league umpire has to work to become a major league umpire. You did it, you know, there's plenty of other people, you know, now coming up. What is your view of the state of umpiring? Do you think it's better, worse, different, the same? How do you view it?
I can tell you that there's one thing that is certain, in my humble opinion, that the umpiring right now behind the plate has never, never been better. It is without a doubt the most consistent plate work that the major leagues have ever seen, and that's why I'm a little apprehensive about the robo umpire. So overall, I think it's harder to umpire. I think the travel is worse. I think that it's much harder than when I started. But the thing about it is, it took me 12 years to get to major leagues. It's being done a lot sooner now.
Right.
And I think the umpires are more, gosh, I'm really going to say this, they look better than when I first came up. And that's a big plus if you really think about it. You know, when your staff, Marty Springstead was my supervisor, one of the greatest umpires to ever live. And he always said, if I make the staff happy, a happy umpire is a great umpire. Mm. And that was Marty's philosophy. Marty was not real big on chastising guys or whatever. And I still think that that is a good adage to live by for the supervisors that are in the game now. And I think they do that. But umpires do talk about there are so much going on now that they have to relegate during the game and such. And this is put on them by the league. And they are dependent on, you know, enforcing the rules, but the rules are starting to pile up and pile up and pile up. When I first started, it was strike ball, safe and out.
Mm, yeah.
And a couple rules here and there. And the game umpiring wise has changed a lot. And to a certain degree, a lot of it's good. And a lot of it is a wait-and-see kind of attitude.
Well, the understanding that there's a lot of great umpires and you have a lot of guys at the top of your list. I asked this about players. Like, give me your guy. Give me your guy you love watching. Is there a guy you love watching as an umpire?
Well, when I worked, Ken Griffey Jr. was the best. Mm. I actually enjoyed him on both sides of it, defense and offensively. And he always came to the plate with a big old smile on his face. And I'm not going to say this because of what Ken Griffey Jr. was my first ejection in the big leagues.
Oh, wow.
And everybody, that's exactly what everybody says. And after that, Ken Griffey Jr. didn't get ejected for another 12 years.
Wow.
And he was just a kid, and he said something off the cuff that was not allowed in that day or this day.
Yeah.
And he got ejected. But you know what? We developed a relationship after that, a very professional relationship. Of course, he said that I baited him, and I said, no, that's not what happened. But you know what? He was, in my humble opinion, the ultimate Major League Baseball player.
Mm.
I just loved watching him play.
That's great. That's a great story. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I want to be honest with you right now. I'm having trouble. I like Mike Trout. I watch him. But you know what? The names are starting to escape me because these guys are so young now. I've been gone for 6 years. I don't know three quarters of the umpires.
I know, but you know what? Your perspective is so valued, Jim. And once again, I really appreciate it. And I hope that you come on again because this is a lot of fun for me. It really is. It's a lot of fun to talk about this stuff.
You ask, and I will guarantee you that I will grant that. I love doing these things, and I'm wide open. You can ask me anything you want, and so, you know, maybe the next time if there's other things you want to get into, I'm all for it.
Yeah, well, I get it, Jim. Like about the Galarraga stuff, or even the 2013 World Series. Like you've been very open about, but I'm like interested about your perspective of what's going on, and you have a great one. So, well, we'll talk.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
We'll talk more. So I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Rob.